Hello and welcome to Anatomy on the Beach with Dr. Leo Stauder. We're going to be talking today about chemistry. We're going to move a little bit away from the beach so we can talk without much disturbance here, just away from the shore a bit. So we want to talk about chemistry, and chemistry is going to be a fundamental of life. So that's why we call it the chemistry of life. Now, fundamental to the chemistry of life is going to be the very, very smallest particles of our life. And these are going to be considered the atoms. Atoms are going to be considered non-living, but they do compose living matter. So when we look at matter, we see that matter has a mass or weight, and it also occupies space. So when we're talking about mass, mass is the universal way of weighing something. So everything in the universe has mass. So mass does not change. So for instance, if you weigh 100 pounds here on the Earth, and let's say that's your mass, let's say you have a mass of 100 grams or 100 pounds, no, let's just say grams. So we have 100 grams of mass. That's not going to change throughout the universe. That's going to be the same on Mars and Jupiter or wherever else. But what will change is weight. And weight is going to be a measure of the amount of gravity that's pulling on matter. So you can see how that could change. And if you've seen old photographs or old movies of people on the moon, you see how they bounce around because they're very, very light. And they're so light because there's less gravity there. So their mass has not changed, but their weight has. So weight and mass are really going to be used here in this course as synonymous terms. They mean the same, but understand that there is that distinction. So like when we discover ourselves going to, for instance, other planets, we won't have weight because the weight's going to be so different. We're going to have to change some of the things that we say, like for instance, there won't be any more Weight Watchers, but there probably will be Mass Watchers. So all matter is going to not only have mass and weight, but it's also going to occupy space. And you've heard the term where you can't be in two places at once. That's because we're composed of mass. We're composed of matter. And our matter, then, cannot be in two places at once because it's going to occupy a space in space A. It can't also occupy a space in space B because that matter has taken up space A. So it's going to occupy space only in one spot. And that's the key to thinking about how matter occupies space. All matter is composed of atoms, and an atom is going to be the smallest particle of matter. And once again, matter is going to be that component part that's going to be occupying space. A single atom is called an element. So atoms equal elements. An element is something that cannot be broken down any further. So that's going to be the component parts of everything that's living is going to be an element. And an element is going to be the same as an atom. Now, if you take an atom and stick it with another atom, now you've formed a molecule. So a molecule is going to be really a collection of two atoms. And all of the elements are going to be contained in what we call the periodic table. The periodic table has a number, or has all of the elements that are composed in our world that we know of. So when we look at the periodic table, we see at the very top left that there's going to be a box, and this box is going to contain really just three things. Initially, right in the middle of the box will be the symbol for that element. In this case, it's going to be an H for hydrogen. At the very top left, we see that there's a number. This is called the atomic number. As we look at the box at the bottom, we see that there's a number there as well. This number is going to be the mass of the element. So we have the atomic number up to the left top. We also have another number called the weight or the mass of the element. And then we also have the symbol of the element. So in this case, we see that hydrogen, and that's what the H stands for, is going to have an atomic number of 1 with an atomic weight of 1, essentially. We'll just say 1, although technically it's 1.0094. But for our purposes, we'll just say it's just 1. So that's hydrogen. If we look to the right side, the very, very top right of the periodic table, We see now that we have HE, and HE is going to be the symbol for helium. So helium is going to be our next element in the periodic table, and we see that its atomic number is going to be 2, and its weight is going to be about 4. And we can do this with all the rest of the elements that are here. Let's look at, for instance, our third row, go down, or our fourth row, actually, go down to the fourth row, where you see 19, and you, at the very end, you see that there's a K, and this would represent, the K represents potassium. And if we look up to that upper left corner of that box, we see it's 19. That means that potassium has 19 as its atomic number. As we look in the bottom of the box with the K, we see that there's 39.098. That's going to be the weight of one atom of potassium. If we look next to potassium, we see that there is a 20, and that's going to be for calcium. The Ca, the big C and the small a, is going to tell us that that's going to be calcium. So that's the symbol for calcium, and we see that one element or one atom of calcium weighs 40.08, or for our purposes, we just say it weighs 40. So we can use the periodic table to gain this information. And what is really significant about this information? Well, when we look at the different elements, we see that they're all going to have as their characteristics an atomic number, a symbol, and also a weight. So when we look at the elements of the human body, we see the most abundant elements are going to be phosphorus, hydrogen, oxygen, nitrogen, carbon, and calcium. So we remember this with the mnemonic phonics. So P for phosphorus, the H is for hydrogen, the O is for oxygen, the NI is for nitrogen to make the mnemonic work, and carbon is the C, and the second C is going to be calcium. Now we don't want to confuse the NI, because NI really stands for nickel, but to make the mnemonic work, we put that I there, but we know in our mind that it's going to be nitrogen. So these are going to be the major components of our body. These are going to be the elements that are most abundant. So when we look at the periodic table and we look at the different elements that are in our bodies, we see that, for instance, phosphorus has a symbol of P. So the atomic number for phosphorus will be found in the periodic table. So all you do is go back to the periodic table, find the P, and you see that that stands for phosphorus, and you read in the upper left box that what its atomic number is. So please fill that in. Hydrogen has the symbol of what? You have to go, first of all, to the atomic number, which is number 1, find that box, which would be up into the left upper corner, and you'll see that that will be the atomic number 1, and then you'll get what the symbol for hydrogen is. Oxygen has the symbol, and it also has an atomic number. So you need to find that on the periodic table and fill that in. You also have nitrogen, its symbol, and also its atomic number is going to be 7. So you want to make sure that you put in the proper symbol there. And then you have a blank space, but you know what the symbol is. It's going to be a C. Its atomic number will be 6. So look for a box in the upper left-hand corner that has a 6, and you'll see that there's a C there, and then you'll have to figure out what the actual element is. We also have calcium, and calcium has a symbol of C with a small a, and its atomic number, you have to figure that out by looking at the periodic table. Now, some elements that we want to know and also to love, these are elements that are important so that you know these. So these are ones you want to memorize. Helium, its symbol is going to be H, big H, small e. Its atomic number, you have to look that up in the periodic table as well. Sodium, its symbol is going to be what? You have to look that up. Its atomic number, you also have to look that up as well in the periodic table. Chlorine, its symbol is C, small l, and its atomic number will be listed there once you find it on the periodic table. Potassium also, what its symbol is and its atomic number is 19. Now, looking at the atom anatomy, we see that we have a nucleus. The nucleus is going to be the center of the atom. We have two subatomic particles that are going to be contained in the nucleus. So when we talk about subatomic, we mean that it has to be under the atom. So it's going to be part of the atom. So some atomic particles such as protons and also neutrons. Then on the outside of the nucleus, we have whizzing around our subatomic particles that are going to be called electrons. So we have electrons whizzing around the outside. We have a core of the atom called a nucleus. When we look at the distinctions between the distances of the electrons from the nucleus, we really can perceive that the nucleus is going to be in the center, like Broward College would be, and the electrons are floating around us here at BC, and they're going to be 40 miles away. So you have to envision this in your mind's eye, you being at downtown, the Broward College campus, and you're downtown in Fort Lauderdale, and you have to picture yourself as maybe a plane that's flying all the way 40 miles out, so that would be in the Everglades, and it's going to go all the way to Homestead Air Force Base. That would be all the way south. Then picture yourself in the same plane now flying 40 miles out into the ocean from BC and now flying back to Palm Beach Airport. So that's how far, if you can just visualize that in your mind, that's how far away the electrons are from the nucleus. Now, subatomic charges are going to be where, remember, these are going to be sub, so they're going to be under the atom or inside of the atom. We're going to have a proton, which is going to have a positive electronic charge. So if you are pro something, you're positive for it. A neutron has no charge. That's why they call them neutral or neutrons. They have no electrical charge. And an electron has a negative electrical charge. If you wet your fingers and stick it in a light socket, you'll have a negative experience because you'll be shocked. This negative experience tells you that electrons are going to be negative. So we have the protons that are positive charges. That's going to be countered by the electrons, which are negative charges. And then we also then have a neutral or a non-charged particle that's going to be called a neutron. So these are going to be really the charges that are going to be inherent in the inside of the atom. Now, some atomic rules are that the atomic number of an atom is going to be the number of protons in its nucleus. So that little number that was up to the left in the periodic table for each element, that's really going to be the number of protons in its nucleus. The atomic weight is going to be the nuclear weight, or the weight of the nucleus. For example, if you have two neutrons and two protons, that's going to give you the atomic weight of 4. So really, when we're talking about weight, we're not talking about electrons, because the electrons, remember, are whizzing around about 40 miles away from the nucleus. So we really can't, well, we can, but it's more difficult to weigh them. Easier to weigh something that's solid, that's in the middle of the atom, and that's going to be the atomic weight. That's going to really be the nucleus. So the number of neutrons always equals the number of protons and the number of electrons for our purposes. So that's in a neutral atom. So the number of neutrons always equals the number of protons and the number of electrons. Now this is only for our purposes. This will change later when you maybe have advanced chemistry courses, but for our purposes, that's the way this is going to work. We're going to have equal numbers of protons and neutrons. So when we look at the atom, we see that we have the proton, the neutron, and the electrons. Remember that the protons are going to be determining the atomic number. That our neutrons with our protons are going to create our nucleus, and this is going to be determining our atomic weight. Our electrons, then, are going to be arranged in shells that are going to be whizzing around the nucleus of the atom. Now, there are some exceptions to these general rules that we just mentioned. All elements have both protons and neutrons in their nucleus, except for hydrogen. Hydrogen only has a proton. So if you notice its weight, it's only one. That's because that weight represents only one of its protons. It does not have a neutron. A neutral element has no charge. The protons equal the electrons. So that would be a neutral element. But the exception would be an ion. And ions are atoms that do not have the same number of electrons as protons. These are called ions. And an ion is going to be a charged particle. The reason it's charged is because it has either lost an electron or it has gained an electron. These elements that are going to be stable are going to have the same number of protons as electrons, and they're going to have full shells. Now let's talk a little bit about shells. Our first shell that comes out from the nucleus is going to want to contain two electrons. So that's the rule. We want our first shell coming out of our nucleus to contain two electrons. If they do contain two, we call this a stable atom, and it will not be reactive. If it, however, has less than two, then this becomes very reactive, and it also then would be considered an unstable atom. So what we have now is then a situation where we have, on our first scenario, we have two electrons and two protons. That is going to be representative of helium. Helium is going to be a very stable, non-reactive element. Whereas when we look at the element that just has one proton and one electron, we see this is going to be unstable or very reactive because the element which this represents, which is hydrogen wants how many electrons in its shell? Two. So it wants two electrons, so therefore it's going to be going out looking for other electrons. It's sort of like when we look at helium, what we see is two people married. They're very, very stable in their relationship. They're not going out to try to find other people. Whereas when we look at hydrogen, it's very unstable. It's a guy that wants to be dating a lot. So, you know, he's dating a lot of different people. He's getting together with a lot of people. He's very, very reactive. So we could envision then that a situation where we could have a hydrogen fuel. Hydrogen fuel would be very reactive as opposed to a helium-based fuel. Or, if you know anything about history and you know about the Hindenburg, Hindenburg was a tragedy that occurred, and there was a dirigible, they called them, which is like a zeppelin, and it carried people, and they filled it up with hydrogen gas, and it blew up. Why did it blow up? Because it's very, very unstable, as we saw. All you have to do is have a little spark, and it will cause a chain reaction, and the hydrogen gas will explode. Whereas our blimps of today, they're filled with helium. And you notice that they can't carry a lot of people, but because it's a heavier gas, but it won't blow up because it's non-reactive. Whereas the hydrogen was a lighter gas, it could carry more people, but the downside was, of course, it was so reactive that it could blow up, and it did. If you're curious about the Hindenburg, just look it up and you'll see that there's a picture of it exploding over New Jersey. And it was like, I think that was like in the 30s. So when we look at ions, once again, we see that we're going to have an element that loses an electron. So therefore, it has more positive charges. The protons aren't going to be changing in the middle of the nucleus. But the electrons can change. You can lose an electron. That means now you have more protons than electrons. So therefore, you're going to be having a positive ion. Or you could have a situation where your element actually gains an electron. If you gain an electron, now you have more electrons, therefore you have more negative charges. And so we would say that this is going to be a negative ion. So ions then are going to be elements that have a positive or negative charge. Or we can just say that they're going to be elements that have a charge. So to determine the charge of an element, what we need to do is add up the positive charges, or the number of protons, and then subtract the number of negative charges, or the number of electrons. So for instance, let's say that we have a hydrogen element. Then we know that hydrogen has one electron in its first shell. So if we add up the one electron in its first shell and add up the number of protons it has, remember it has only one, so we have one positive, that's the proton, we have one negative, that's the electron, we add them together and we see that we come out with zero. So that has no charge. So that element has no charge. We do know that it's unstable, but that's another story. It nonetheless has no charge. Now, if we were to take that same hydrogen element, that one proton on the inside, and then take away that electron, now we have a situation where we have a hydrogen without an electron. If we have this situation, then we count up the number of protons, and we have one. Number of electrons, we have none. So therefore, this element that has lost its electron will be called an ion. And it will also be called a positive ion because it has that one proton and no electron, so therefore it's going to be one. So we would write this as an H with a one positive right next to it. So that would be considered a hydrogen ion or a hydrogen positive ion. So some other examples of ions would be, like for instance, if we had sodium, and we looked inside of its nucleus, we'd see that there's going to be 11 positive charges because they have 11 protons in the middle of the nucleus. Now, we also then look at the number of electrons, and we see we have 11 of them whizzing around the nucleus. So because we have 11 positives and 11 negatives, there would be no charge. So it's not an ion. But if sodium were to lose an electron, like for instance, if it were to lose an electron in its last shell, we would see then that we would have 10 electrons, or 10 negatives. We would have 11 positives. So if we were to subtract 11 positives from 10 negatives, we'd see that we would have one positive. So we would call this a positive ion. So all ions are going to be electrically charged, either positively or negatively. So when we look at ions by another name, mostly we'll call ions that have a positive charge positive ions. But they can also be called cations. So a cation is going to be a positive ion. So just remember the T in cation looks like a positive. You can also think of cats as being very positive because they have paws. Mostly we call ions that have a negative charge negative ions, but they can also have another name, and that's called an anion. So an anion is going to be a negative ion, and the way you remember that is A-N-I-O-N. Anion is a negative ion. Ions that conduct electricity are going to be called electrolytes. Electrolytes are very important for our body to function. Some of your body's electrolytes are going to be sodium, which is a positive ion. Calcium, which is going to be two positive ions. Magnesium is a two positive ion. Potassium is a one positive ion. And chlorine would be a negative ion. Now, when we look at calcium as a two positive ion, we see that he must have either lost or gained electrons to have it be charged. What would be your guess with calcium? Has it lost two electrons, or has it gained two electrons so that it's a two positive? Yes, it has lost two electrons. And to figure this out, if you take two electrons away from calcium, add up the number of positives, add up the number of negatives, number of protons, and then subtract them from the number of electrons, and you'll see that, calcium 2 plus has lost two electrons. So ions that form solutions capable of conducting electricity are going to be called electrolytes. And these are essential for the body's functioning, particularly for the brain, for the spinal cord, for all your nerves, and also for muscle function. And you may have heard of individuals that exercise a lot and don't replenish their electrolytes. They can get muscle cramps, and they can get all sorts of, they can even have like emotional symptoms, even coma can occur if you don't have the proper electrolytes. Imbalance is going to affect everything from muscle cramps to brittle bones to coma. You could even die from having a problem with electrolytes. There was a woman who went on a game show, and she was required to drink lots and lots of water. In fact, if you look it up, it's a woman that had to hold her Wii for a Wii. So she wanted to win a Wii, the console game for her family. And she drank so much water that she ultimately died. The reason was because she had an electrolyte dysfunction. She had electrolyte imbalance. And ultimately, first of all, caused a lot of headache. And then finally, she died from it. So this can be very, very severe if we have an imbalance in our electrolytes. Now, another reaction that we need to talk about is going to be the reduction and oxidation reactions. Now, a reaction is going to be where we have a combination of substances, let's just put it that way, and these combinations of substances can get together in a reaction. They react to each other. It's like two people that get together and maybe have a fight. They're reacting to each other. So two elements, atoms, molecules, can have reactions to each other. So in this case, we have a redox reaction, and it's named that way so that we realize it's a reduction and oxidation reaction. So redox means reduction and oxidation. Now, what is reduction? What is oxidation? The atom that gains an electron is called reduced. So these atoms gain energy, and they're considered reduced. Now, the atom that loses the electron is considered oxidized. Now, these atoms lose energy. So to remember this, we remember that Leo, the lion, goes GER. Leo stands for lose electron oxidation, and GER, gain electron reduction. So when we look at a graphic of this, we see that we have a oxidation or a loss of an electron. That's going to be picked up by the reduced atom that's going to be actually picking up this electron. Now in this case, what we see is a actual loss of the electron, and that atom then is going to be considered oxidized. Now oxidation is going to be the process that's going to be occurring as we lose electrons. Now the reduction is going to be the process that's going to be occurring as we gain electrons. So when we lose an electron, that electron that is lost, in this case, that red arrow, that's going to be representing really a free radical. And free radicals are going to be those electrons that are lost that are looking for a place to stay. In this case, they're looking for an atom to reduce. But we also have the process of oxidation that occurs. And we see a number of examples of oxidation in our world. For instance, if we think of a car that rusts, the reason that it is rusting is because the metal is breaking down. The metal is losing its electrons, so therefore the metal is oxidizing. And with it losing the electrons, it becomes less safe because now the structure has actually been changed because it has gone through the process of oxidation. It has lost its electrons. We also see it if we have a banana and we keep it out for a while. We see that the banana, you know, we take off the skin, we see the banana is going to be turning brown. it's going through the process of oxidation. We can see the same with an apple. We bite into an apple and wait a little while, we come back and it's brown. That's because it has lost its electrons in the environment. But we can stop this, and how do we do that? Well, we could take a banana and cover it with a lemon solution or a lime solution. And we'll see that we can keep the banana without its skin for a number of days even, or at least a number of hours, because it will not turn brown. And you go, well, why is that? Well, the reason that is because the fluid of the lemon, the fluid of the lime, the juice, is going to have antioxidant properties. It's going to be an antioxidant. It's going to prevent that electron from leaving. So if it prevents it from leaving, then it won't become brown. So that antioxidant that's within the lemon juice and the lime juice is going to be containing vitamin C, and vitamin C is an antioxidant. So it assists in our body to decrease oxidation. So if we take in antioxidants in our diet, we're going to be having a decrease of these free radicals. So therefore, the free radicals are going to be decreasing the amount of destruction to our tissues. So we'll tend to live longer, and we'll tend to not age as much, or at least not look as old. So it's really an anti-aging kind of thing, because it's going to be preventing this redox reaction from occurring.